welcome to episode 35 of Gallifrey Public Radio. The hider in the house is holding our hand, and we are afraid. This week, we talk about hide. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Witten.
We need somebody who is more intense.
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
Perfect Whovian's name.
And Keir Hansen.
I'm holding up for catfight.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 35 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we take a screen capture every 1 million or so CPU cycles and realize that there's a fourth member of our discussion panel stuck in a pocket podcast slightly to our left. I am Kieran. Joining me in the GPR studios here is Jay. Good evening, Jay.
How's it going?
And Melissa. Melissa, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am and sir. How are you guys?
Very well indeed. We have new Who to discuss. We have gotten our spooky, scary, and thankfully not Shaggy and Scooby episode provided to us in the form of Hyde, classic ghost tale with a Whovian twist.
Yeah. I thought this episode was a little bit kind of all over the place at times. I mean, it was definitely set in like chunks, and it started out as actually genuinely scary. I mean, like I was telling my wife, if they had stretched this out into 2 hours, they could have made a very decent horror movie out of it.
Yeah.
And it had that feel up in the front, and it was, you know, and then it jumped into more of the traditional Doctor Who story with them going through time and everything like that. And then at the end, it was more of the action montage. So it was like, I mean, we had three separate things in this show. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it all worked together really well.
I could see what you're saying about it being all over the place. But I think that this is also the first real consistent horror story that we've had in a while. Because the show used to be known for that. The phrase, behind the couch, comes to mind, because this is it's a phrase only used about watching scary episodes of Doctor Who. I think it was consistently scary, but I can see what you're saying about it being, you know, just it felt like a couple of different things kind of spliced together.
I don't know. I personally kind of feel like the episode was operating on you know, maybe two or three different levels, but the I don't think it got jumbled at any point.
No,
I think it transitioned relatively well. And each component that they were doing, like as far as the classic ghost story, haunted house story, as you were mentioning, Jay, was exceptionally well done and beautifully shot.
Oh yeah, the part where they're in the hallway and it shows the crooked man in the corner, like it just real quick shift and then it cuts to the next scene, and I literally like kind of shook, and I was like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, it was a genuinely like, holy crap, stuff's going to go down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or when they were looking from the window up above and seeing the Doctor and Claire going off into the woods and the lightning flashes and there's that quick shot of their little time traveler illuminated in the window pane behind them for that split second. I mean, these are classic horror story techniques. Yeah. You know, the creepy drafty house, the walking around with a candelabra, even though there was power in the main rooms of the house, and yet the rest of the house is dark. Well, anyway,
yeah, well.
But you let it all go because it was that well done.
Yeah.
I think there
was a lot of mystery left to it too. Like, I mean, they didn't explain everything. You know, we still didn't get, you know, why the chalk circle started smoking, why what exactly was it that caused the crash, how the second crooked man got stuck in that pocket universe as well. It was like there's a lot of stuff that was left as a mystery, and I think that just added so much to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you got to wonder, we were discussing with a couple of other people about the episode, and I was saying, I was hung up on the writing on the wall. You know, the help me written on the wall.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that doesn't make sense to me. I don't really understand exactly why it is that, you know, of all the explanation, you know, the scientific explanation that they tried to put behind this haunting that wasn't necessarily a haunting, you know, and before they threw the switch to get into, temporal gizmo mode, you know, and start including all of these things and the crystal and the helmet and the spinning black platter of time that was like the signal of her, you know, pending approach. before they got into all that, I'm still like, but wait a minute. There's still some classic Ghost stuff that they haven't addressed for me. But they left it on the rug, and so we've got other stuff to discuss. Chalk it up to a good horror story. And we're moving on.
Yeah.
But this leads me to some other questions. One of the things that they moved on to was this great parallel, I won't even call it a parallel because it wasn't a direct parallel, but it was a slightly one-off in terms of the doctor-companion relationship that we had with our Professor Palmer and Emma.
Yeah, I love the whole joke, too, when the doctor calls her the professor's companion and she's like, assistant. It's like, you know, you always hear those two interchanged in the U.K., whereas, you know, it's the doctor's assistant, and then we're always about it. You know, it's the companion. And
well, the line is, it's 1974, and you're the assistant. Because in 1974, that he had his assistant.
Yeah, very true. But I do, one of the things that I literally slammed my hands down on the armrest the first time that I saw it, because I was so pleased that they did it, was the conversation that Clara and Emma had, which was that entire sequence was I was very pleased to see. I think I'm very glad that they put that in there for a number of reasons. But first and foremost, because of the fact that when Emma kind of, you know, she expresses her sort of feelings towards the professor, and it's difficult to work with somebody and have these feelings, and especially as an empath, even more difficult because she doesn't know what's genuine as far as what she's picking up on, which is a great premise. You know, you never think about it. Well, the love life of an empath, you know, other than Sookie. You know? but then she turns to Claire and says, well, you know, that's got to be what you go through. And thankfully, they shut that down right there.
Oh, yeah.
She said, no such thing.
And that's one thing I've noticed with this, the first four episodes we've had, is there hasn't been, like, any flirting at all. You know, there have been little moments where they could squeeze it in, but they don't.
They go out of their way not to.
Yeah, and I'm just after Asylum of the Daleks and after, you know, she kissed him in the snowman, that was my big fear. And the fact that they're like, you know, every chance that there could be something, they put a very firm, like, no.
They are enjoying each other. I mean, they're playing games with some of the things, you know, dare me to go, that sort of thing, and they're having fun with it. But yeah, thankfully they're more into that sort of as I was hoping to see, that brother sister relationship.
Well, I'm starting to see it as when Clara is these other incarnations, when she's Oswin and Clara Oswin Oswald, she is able to be romantic with the Doctor. But somehow in this incarnation, she's not. But that makes sense. Okay. You know.
No, that's an interesting point. Well, aside then from the fact that when they're in. You know, we're on an adventure mode. Everything seems to be kind of okay. Now, let's go back to some of our sort of running theories and concerns here about the, and this episode was perfect for this. And I think it was well timed as far as giving us a break from all of this last week. There really was none of the, what the hell is Clara discussion during Cold War. But this one just gave you a little bit, you know, a little bit towards the end of the episode, maybe a line or two mentioned through. So they're going back into it tiptoeing. But we're now dealing with, as much as we were dealing with the whole theme of haunting, you know, haunting by ghosts, haunted by your past, because the professor being haunted by his past, and obviously everything he did in the war, doctor haunted by his past because the professor keeps kind of alluding to it without even knowing it. But what about the theme of trust?
Yeah, that's one thing I was going to bring up, is that the Oswin and the doctor really don't have that typical doctor companion relationship, because the doctor does not trust her. I mean, he really doesn't, and you can see that kind of wearing on both of them. And you know, when Emma and Oswin or Clara were talking, you know, she says, you know, be careful, don't trust him. There's a sliver of ice in his heart. And I was just like, that is awesome that, you know, she's calling him out on that, saying that because it's so obvious if you look at how he is with all the other companions. Because with all the other companions, it's always been like, you know, they've chosen to be there with him, or he was, you know, intrigued by them or something. He's obsessed with Clara. You know, we've seen that. He has gone out of his way to figure out what is going on with her, and it's become a damaging factor in their relationship.
Yeah. Well, that goes right into the conversation that they had as they were standing around the TARDIS console, which talk about trust, there's a whole whether or not the TARDIS trusts her.
Yeah.
Because that in and of itself is a fascinating dynamic. You know, the other woman, you know, getting catty.
Yeah, we'll get into that one.
In my notes, I just have Clara and TARDIS catfight.
Yeah, exactly.
we'll get into that one in a little bit. But yeah, the whole exchange between Clara and the doctor while they're jumping through and he's taking the pictures, I was in love with that whole thing. With that, I mean, one, the classic thing of, you know, it's like, you've got a time machine, use the time machine. You know, it's the fact that they were able to put that in there. You know, and then Clara, you know, pointing out, being like, you know, to you, I'm not even born yet and I'm dead already. You know, it's like the entirety of the human race is nothing but ghosts to you.
Yeah.
Just that exchange. Well,
and that's an interesting point. And I think it was very careful about the writing of that particular exchange was the fact that she is referring to humanity as a whole. We are all ghosts to you, being this timeless creature, you know, for all intents and purposes. Mm-hmm. His response, you know, when she says, you know, is that what we are to you? And he responds, no, you know, you're a mystery. You, singular, you.
Well, he says you. It could be either way. You know, it's like, obviously in the trailer for this part of the season, you know, yes, they played it up that, you know, he was talking to her, saying she was the only mystery we're solving. But put it in context, he could be talking about humanity. He could be using a veiled meaning to also reference her, but it seemed to me like
she took it as humanity meant it as her.
I don't know. I felt like he kind of meant it as humanity, but there was also that thing under there like, yes, I'm talking specifically about you as well, but I'm not going to say that. You know, so
right.
It had that dual quality that he likes to use sometimes.
Hmm. Well, take that trust issue one step farther then. So, okay, obviously Emma was picking up on something, maybe her empathic abilities allowed her to be able to you know, pull from Gallifreyan persona as well, and you know, she makes the warning about being careful of trusting the doctor, and that great exchange that she has with the professor, where the professor says that, you know, the more that someone sees, the more horrific things someone sees, the more you're going to hear them lie, you know, the easier it's going to be to lie. And of course, you know, stretch that out across 1,200 years of experiences, and now you understand why the first rule is that the doctor lies.
Yeah,
I mean, I thought that was a great kind of tip of the hat to that structure. But my question is then, at the end of the episode, when he's got that quick coat and he dashes back really quickly to you know, reveal that he had meant to be there all along, talks to Emma and asks what Clara is, and you get the perfectly normal girl response. Is that honest? Or is it because of the fact that Emma doesn't trust the doctor at all?
That's a really good point.
She definitely doesn't play it like she's just giving him the answer. I think there's something else going on, and that's a really good point that she doesn't trust him. She was the one that said about the sliver of ice in his heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the fact that she only picks up on one heart, so not going to damage her for her bionic skills.
She was talking emotionally, not physically.
He's got two slivers, slightly to the side of one another, in his hearts.
One slightly above, and to the left. I love the fact that, I mean, it was five people cast five cast. You know, it was. Yeah.
Foreign an appearance by a time traveler. Hilla was nothing.
So, I mean, just it was, you know, one of those bottle episodes, or not really a bottle episode, but, you know, just this small group of people, we're going to focus on the story that surrounds them and their interactions with each other. You know, the doctor and Clara, the doctor and the professor and Emma, Emma and Clara. You know, it's just all those different dynamics going on.
The professor and Gilligan and Mary.
Exactly, yeah.
Keeping it down to those critical four and the fact that they sort of ran in lockstep with one another through the episode and were experiencing a lot of large and small scale similar steps. what I think was brilliant. The fact that they were able to use, I keep wanting to pronounce it Dougray, but I know it's not pronounced Dougray, Mr. Scott's talents as the professor. He is a brilliant actor. Absolutely. Oh,
yeah. That dude is my childhood. He was the prince in Ever After, Cinderella story, Drew Barrymore. Yeah. And there's this mini series version from the 90s of Arabian Nights where he's like the main dude, and it, like, it just reminds me so much, like, he always played the prince like in the 90s.
Yeah, not, and now he's old in a tweed jacket and glasses.
Well, not to, and another thing,
he's the, always, the perpetual, like, you almost had that role, like he was almost James Bond and almost the doctor, and like just all these roles that he, like, you know, he was considered for but never gotten.
Yeah. Well, now he's extra sad.
But I love the fact that those two characters of Palmer and Emma were given such an opportunity to be strong supporting characters, mm-hmm. and not falling into the typical Whovian tropes of just being in the background while the doctor's, you know, doing his whiz-bang thing. You know, we got to know a great deal about them. They were very personal characters from start to finish through the episode. And we got emotionally invested in them,
yeah.
which is really rare, especially in the last couple of seasons. So
absolutely.
I'm glad to see that you know, that Neil Cross in particular, of all the writers, for him to give it that much, to give his supporting characters that much weight, I was very pleased to see.
I think, good. Thank you for the shout out to the writer, because this show gets so many good. We, you know, every week we're like, oh my God, it's so and so, like in this episode. And, you know, they get these really good actors, and the episodes are not always very memorable. So, you know, shout out for this one being.
Yeah. Now, this is the guy that gave us the Rings of Akkatin. And I actually found out that this episode was the one that he wrote first. He wrote this one, and Stephen Moffat enjoyed it so much that he asked him to write another one, and that's where we get Rings of Akkatin. So yeah. if you look at it and put it in that order, you know, this was closer to a traditional Doctor Who story. You know, it had the time travel, it had the traditional kind of feel to it, but you could see where he was going with it. It was something different. And then Moffat was like, okay, yeah, give me another one, and you see him go just further afield. And so it was kind of like, you know, if it had stuck to this one, you know, he would be like an all-star writer, in my opinion. But yeah. because we got the other one, it's like, okay, you got your, you know, you got your head blown up a little bit and went too far with it. But
they shot this one first, too. I believe this was the first of of the Jenna episodes they shot. Yeah. So, which really kind of throws her performances into a bit of a loop in terms of what we were getting out of things like the you know, our whole Spoonheads episode and everything. So just really unusual.
I feel like if we had had a full 13 episode season with Clara, none of these episodes would be judged as harshly as they have been. But we're like, okay, we've only got three more episodes or five more episodes, or, you know, we've got a short amount of time left with this companion. There needs to be some progression. Whereas, if
and
this
the companion were, is the linchpin to the mystery for this whole latter half of the series.
Right.
If it was just a new companion just banging around, you know, like when Donna first showed up or when Martha first stepped into the scene, you're like, okay, well, new companion, same doctor, let's go. Let's see how she reacts to all this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
But the fact that she's the underpinning to everything that's driving the doctor right now, she is absolutely in a stark focus, and we're critiquing every flinch of her face.
Yeah, it's gotten really crazy.
Well, now we get to, I know we wanted to put this on shelf for the moment, but what about Our Lady in Blue?
Yeah,
what about TARDIS's reaction to her, and what are we learning from this?
Yeah, so obviously, yes, the TARDIS doesn't like Claire. That was all but confirmed in this one. You know, I think what it is she doesn't trust her. You know, I mean, that, what is it the doctor said in an earlier season? You know, the TARDIS doesn't like paradoxes. Mm-hmm. And that's what Clara is. She's a paradox, and the TARDIS can't figure her out.
Well,
or does can the, it?
Does, yeah, and it knows what she is, and that's why it doesn't like her.
Yeah, because think back to, oh god, which episode was it? It might have been, was it Akuten? Might have been the beginning of Akuten. Whenever he's dashing around the console and
trying to figure out what she is. Yeah,
and he's seeing information on the screens that he doesn't like. The TARDIS has done the research and has presented its case, saying, you know, this crap don't fly.
Yeah,
I don't want her around, and he's refusing to see all of it. But at the same time, he needs to solve it. He's compelled to solve it.
Yeah,
but he only wants to see it if it's an answer he wants to see.
Yeah.
So I got a feeling that the TARDIS knows, or at least has a better inclination, you know, as far as it can determine, of what Clara's real backstory or origin or intent or whatever is, and. Or maybe thinks it has more on her than the Doctor does, and because the TARDIS can't lay it all out succinctly in order to convince him, or doesn't have the last of the pieces that it needs to really prove its case, it's just going to shut her out and say, you know what, I'd rather just not have her around if it's all the same to you, because she's a viable threat of some sort.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that confused me was, I mean, obviously the TARDIS doesn't like her, but at the end we see it let her in
and go off
on a suicide mission with her.
Oh, well, when you bring up that it's a suicide mission, I guess it makes more sense.
To rescue the one thing that the TARDIS considers a value.
Yeah, and that's what it is it's, do you feel like Clara made enough of a case that the TARDIS is like, okay, I will give you a chance, or did it, you know, weigh all the possibilities, look at all the possible outcomes, and say, this is the only chance I have of getting the Doctor back. I'm still watching you.
I saw it more as it doesn't like her on a paradox level, but it likes her on a personal level. So if the Doctor's in trouble, you know, it's fine with her.
I don't know if it likes her on a personal level. I mean, look at the interface that it presented and say, you know, the interface is programmed to show you the one.
Yeah, but
one
couldn't that have been... Yeah, what if it was her, but like extra bitchy or something? Like, no, then that, you know, the TARDIS hates her. Like, you know,
it added 25 pounds.
Yeah.
That was a claws extended, straight up shot at Clara, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah. And Clara took it like that, too.
Exactly. Yeah. But
I loved seeing the TARDIS, you know, personified again. You know, like the personal side of the TARDIS. And, you know, I know that they're trying to treat it more as a machine, and that I understand that, and I feel like that's kind of necessary to some extent, but you still have to acknowledge the fact that she does have a personality.
Up good writing, because you didn't even need an actor there to feel that personality.
Yeah.
So it's, I guess, between the interface. Between the, I did notice that when they were dashing back off into the woods to start doing the, you know, the photography lesson, you know, and Clara stops to shake out the umbrella and things, she doesn't follow the Doctor in distinctly, and I'll have to watch this again just to kind of make sure that I interpreted this correctly. It was almost as if Clara allowed the door to close so that she could knock and be given entrance, because that hesitation, that she didn't just immediately follow the Doctor in with the umbrella, mm-hmm. and do that whole odd little exchange with the dripping umbrella, mm-hmm. that she hung back for a couple of seconds for no real discernible reason that I could see to allow the door to close, just to knock and be let in.
Yeah, but
did you catch that?
Yeah, I remember seeing it. It felt kind of odd, but I'm not sure if it was an intentional, you know, a point of like Clara's character, or if it was just, you know, they needed that exchange to happen, and so, you know, from the script's point of view, they had to have Clara wait outside. You know, it's like I'm not sure if it was intentional or necessary.
Yeah. Okay. Huh. I don't know. It's I guess between that and then the exchange that they have inside about the where to put the umbrella, and where did the umbrella stand go? Exactly. Are we supposed to draw something from the fact that the umbrella stand has been moved?
I think it was...
Apparently all the other doctors had umbrella stands.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was more just like, you know, the previous control rooms may have had an umbrella stand. Like, you know, there was a coat rack in the previous TARDIS. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so it's... I think it was just like, oh wait, this is a new version. There should be one here, you know.
It was a little late for that gag, I guess, but yeah. All right, I'll take it. Oh, speaking of callbacks, though, absolutely love the fact that when he knew he had to go out onto the volcanic planet surface,
oh yeah, the orange suit,
he puts on Tennant's suit.
Yes,
I freaked out when I saw that. I'm like, it's the suit from the Satan pit. I love yes. that suit. It fits him differently.
Yeah, and it does. It looks like it's too baggy.
Exactly. If you look at the, although they're both bean poles.
So, oh yeah, you know. Yeah.
But yeah. yeah,
I know
that was nice.
It was, and that's the thing. Like, we've been getting all kinds of nostalgic references in this part of the series. Yeah, mm-hmm. This is the first one that's really been a blatant, you know, New Who reference. Yeah, I mean, we've gotten all kinds of stuff from the classic series. This is the first one that's come back from, you know, within this decade.
Yeah,
you know?
From within the 2005 and up. Yeah, yeah. Huh. Interesting. Because now I'm going to wonder if they're intentionally going to seed a few of those, simply because, you know, we know what we're building towards, or whether it's just something where they wanted to make sure that they scattered references, both classic and modern, just for the sake of doing so, you know, as a wink to the hardcore fans out there across the board. Because we know, you know, Steemo being a classic fanboy, but he didn't write or direct this one, so, I don't know.
Let's see.
But wait, speaking of callbacks, I thought now that I've seen more Classic Who, I thought that the new interior of the TARDIS with the TV screens where you can see outside, I thought that was a nice callback, because it's very, I think it was the second Doctor that I'm thinking of who had these TVs in his TARDIS.
Oh, you could even, it was even back in the very episode one, you know, back with Hartnell when they first arrive, back in the, you know, in the prehistoric times. You know, he allows them to see a monitor, see what's going on outside, to see that they've changed location. The first time he demonstrates that the TARDIS can travel, so it's nice to see that they're back to that too. You know, check the backup cameras or whatever, the reverse parking cameras. But we've gotten lots of really nice elements with it. Did you notice that? I mean, knowing that we're going to be having the journey into the center of the TARDIS next week. That they started to do, like, there's like this point where he goes to start to dash down a hallway, and I'm like, where are they going? Where are they going? And then he stops and comes back.
Yes.
Ah, dang.
Like, I thought we were going to get just a little bit of, no.
Just set me up a little bit.
I do love, like, everything that they've done with him, like, running down the hallway so far. You know, I forget which, I think it was the Bells of St. John, where he goes and runs down the hallway, and then you see him like walk back across, pointing the other way, like he took a wrong turn.
Yeah,
it's just it's the fact that they're building it up to be like, okay, this is a big thing. It's not all happening in the control room anymore. It's, you know, he's constantly leaving the control room to go to do other stuff, and they're really building it up so that when we get to next week's episode, that it's really going to, you know, make it seem, you know, like it fits.
Right. I can't even begin to process what my expectation levels are for next week. I mean, I've got all kinds of – it's happening on multiple levels. You know, what I want to see, but then also what I want to experience.
Well, I have no expectations whatsoever. I'm trying to avoid that altogether.
Yeah. I won't call them expectations. Wish list.
I definitely had a wish list, and then when I saw the trailer for next week, I'm like, this is not playing – out anything like I had pictured in my head. Now, granted, in my head, it was more, you know, just an hour-long tour of the TARDIS and not an actual story. So, you know, of course, it's not going to turn out like that. But yeah, I'm sitting there watching it like, this is not what I had in my head. I'm going to shut down and let next week happen and see what it is. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm definitely trying to go into this, you know, open-mindedly.
Mm. Yeah. But I think, you know, looking back to this episode in particular, if you take out all of the subtext that we look for as far as the, you know, the Clara mystery and so forth, a lot of what I've been trying to do with the latter half of Series 7 is look and see how the dynamic of the of this new pairing and the episodes and the scripts that they're being handed can function as, which is something I'm sure that they're always concerned about, the cultivation of new fans as the show continues. I mean, it has its diehards. It has people that have come around to it in the last, you know, 6 years or so. And then there's it's constantly starting to collect new viewers. It has to. I mean, it has to stay viable, right?
Right.
So with something like last week was such a nice little bookended, just take it as it is kind of episode, that's one that I could pluck down in front of somebody and say, you know what, you don't really understand all the premise, but you're not going to need to know too much. Watch this. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it didn't really, it wouldn't be something where someone would keep turning to me through the entire episode going, well, what the hell is that all about? What the hell is this? What is that? Because yeah. It didn't need to. Does this one, because it is a ghost story that happens to have a very Whovian bent to it, mm-hmm. would this be something that you could use as a, maybe not an introductory episode, but a starter set?
If you're going to include it in a few other episodes to give someone the feel for the show, possibly, yeah. Definitely not like a, you know, sit down and watch this, you know, as your first episode.
Oh, but, no.
But yeah, I mean, if it's someone that, you know, they've seen a couple, they understand the basics, and you're like, okay, yeah, it would be a decent one to show them where the show is now, I guess.
I was thinking about it in terms of as a way to show how versatile the show can be. You know, this one's funny, this one's spooky, this one's techy, this one's, you know.
I don't know. I still feel like if you're going to...
There are probably better examples.
Yeah, the problem we've got is that you've got episodes that are scary, mm-hmm. and then you've got episodes like the horror episodes, which have always been bad. You know, like The God Complex or Night Terrors. This is the first one that set out to be a horror-themed episode and did it right. That's not saying that there aren't others that show the spooky side that are better, even though they're not set out to be that way. You know, I mean, honestly, the first one that comes to mind is Blink.
Nothing's going to match Blink. Yeah.
Yeah, but that again, would
be, that's still going to be one of the first episodes, period.
Yeah, but again, those are two separate feelings. You know, like Blink is very much like... You know, your slasher film kind of jump scary, yeah. whereas this one is, you know, just makes you feel creepy and spooky and just, yeah, kind of feeling to it. So it depends on what you're looking for, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'm personally, you know, for all the kind of the clunks and the bumps that we took through the first couple of episodes with the last two that we've had, I'm happy with how things are pointed at the moment, or how it sort of leveled itself out. You notice that the rabid fan base has calmed down quite a bit.
Well, right up until the doctor said metabolus, but you know, that's something different.
Yeah, I didn't really, and that even threw me. I'm like, I was actually talking about this to my other cast too, and she said, oh well, it's the you know, it's the gem. He was like, wait a minute, but I would have the name wrong. He called it something different. What the hell? But
The third doctor referred to it as Metabilis, mm-hmm. and then, you know, Matt Smith says Metabilis, and the internet thus exploded in outrage. You know, I mean, it's been called Spider-Gate. You know, it's this huge thing, and I'm like, really? I mean, it's separated by close to 40 years of time, two separate actors, not to mention that, you know, plenty of those actors have had accents, and it's just... you know, it's just this huge thing that
Smith mispronounces things constantly. I will bet that until the day that they were shooting it, Akaten was a cotton, like it was supposed to be from the Egyptian origins. But he couldn't lock it into his head. He kept saying Akaten, Akaten. So they said, oh, "Screw it, all right, it's Akaten." But when we sing the songs, we're pronouncing it Akaten, cotton.
I don't understand the whole outrage. It's like, yes, I heard it, and I was like, wait a minute, whatever. You know, I don't know why people are getting so bent out of shape. But.
Yeah, different doctors pronounce it differently.
Because at that point, you were getting down to the time-techy portion of our episode, which is when all of the rabid fanboys really jumped to the forefront, because this is the stuff that they love to take apart, because the inconsistencies are always a mile wide.
Yeah. We have to defend our canon.
Technology. They make it up on the fly. Come on. They're inventing technology to get out of the situation. Leave it alone. Enjoy the story.
Actually, we've got a if you're interested in this whole dynamic, we've actually got a blog post up on GallifreyPublicRadio.com right now, talking about the whole, you know, the whole deal going on between this right now. So if you're interested in reading a little bit more about it, go check that out.
Please do. Yeah. And we'll be trying to provide more on site about, you know, that are not just, you know, our episode reactions and things, but a lot of things who related as far as trends that we're seeing as far as the behaviors of the fan base or misbehaviors of the fan base.
Yeah.
And some other things just sort of related to the Hooniverse that, that we find just as interesting as what's being broadcast, because it really is a creature in and of itself.
Yeah.
I think what I'm taking away from this episode in particular, like if I'm just going to sum it up into like the 10 word sort of thing, you know, good ghost story, little bit of advancement on the Clara front, and a good relationship, a steadying of the relationship between Doctor and Clara, aside from the trust issue.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like the fact that after. That we didn't have any real reference to the Clara mystery in the last two episodes. In this one, I felt like we should have gotten something, you know, just a little bit more, because it's like, okay, we're coming up on the end of the season kind of quick now. You got to give us something to go on here. So it's,
what do you guys think? The last thing that I have in my notes is, why was he smiling when Emma didn't tell him who Clara was? Like, she, you know, when she kept insisting that she was just an ordinary girl, the doctor started smiling. I don't know if, like, I feel like, because you're saying, oh, they're not giving us anything to go on. Like, that's the only thing that I've written that, like, I think was something to go on. But what if there are all kinds of clues about, you know, and we're going to be like, oh, that's why, like, you know, he already knew, and, like...
I think a lot of that is going to be left really vague, so that we can have our own interpretation. Now, we're down to the point where we're interpreting facial tics.
Right.
You know, is he smiling because that's what he wanted to hear, and he's pleased that he got some affirmation? Is he smiling because he knows you're obviously, you know, you may be a really valuable empath for certain species, but you obviously don't know what the hell she is, because even I don't know. Or whatever, but it's a smile. It's enigmatic.
Yeah, very much so. All in all, I felt like this was a good episode. I mean, not great, not tremendous, but it was good. I enjoyed it. I mean, I'd say, you know, net positive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Take the last two. You know, last week's Adventure in a Can, this week's Scooby-Doo episode, which one do you think was the better, just little on its own standalone episode?
I don't know. I mean, they're so different that it's kind of hard to pick. You know, I mean, if you're really into the classic Who and everything that goes along with that, you're gonna pick last week's episode, because I mean that's exactly what it was. Mm. You know, it could have been dropped into any. You know, any of the classic series and been fine. This one is a little bit more, it's a little further afield. So it's kind of hard to pick which one you really want without saying, I prefer this style of storytelling.
Okay. And they're both very indicative of the whole show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm just in general, I'm pleased that we've gotten past some of the, you know, the butthurt over recent changes, and we can now start to really enjoy the episodes for what they are. You know, time tech aside, or pronunciation of time tech aside, we've had a couple of decent episodes. We've got a lot of our concerns put to rest, and we've got a couple of great ones coming up that I'm so psyched about.
This is really where I expected the series to take off, is, you know, this was going to be a decent episode, and then everything coming up from here on out is, yeah, it looks like it's just going to be golden. So I can't wait.
Yeah. Well, We only have a few more days.
Yeah.
A few more days and we can travel to the center.
Yay. Yeah, I'm so excited about this. I can't even talk about it. Just yay. it just comes out as nonverbal just squeeze.
Just sounds.
This is the only thing I'm going to put out there because it's just the only thing that keeps coming into my mind because of the nature of what you saw in the scenes for the next kind of thing and the quick little teaser that they gave you about how, you know, oh, adventure and oh, look, the TARDIS is laying on the side. Oh, and guys with torch cutters and oh, and Clara running. Oh, and explosions and oh, and all I'm thinking is Sophie's Choice.
What?
Who do you save?
Oh, geez.
Both are in trouble. The TARDIS and Clara. Who do you save? That's what I'm thinking.
Well, it's an easy choice, and the answer is the TARDIS, so I hope that that's not...
Clara will be back next week.
Yeah, exactly.
She'll pop out of the tissue box somewhere.
Let Clara die and then go find her again. It's, yeah,
right.
It hasn't been... emerge from the goo.
Actually, yeah, I would love that episode. Just the first 15 minutes or so of his choice, Clara does not get chosen, and the rest of it is a TARDIS episode. And
oh,
we're back to Clara the next week.
What if it were a Groundhog Day episode, where like that Supernatural episode they did where Dean kept dying, so now you've got Clara just getting offed every 3 minutes, and then Doctor wakes up, ah, crap, I got to do it again, dude. Just over and over and over. We go through like 90 Claras in 42 minutes. Fantastic.
Just,
and every time she dies, she's in a different room in the TARDIS interior. So we get to see the pool room, we get to see the kitchen, we get to see the galley, we get to see the
everyone's
diner.
Happy.
You know, then 2/3 of the way through the episode, it's like we've got the premise, and so they just do like a 10-minute stretch of Clara dying, all the different ways of killing her off.
Just a montage of.
And you've got the Red Skelton music going behind. Do 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 do.
Perfect.
Well, we actually do have a little bit of news to talk about this week.
Right.
Kier, did you need to bounce or you get
to
stick?
I think I'm going to have to at this point, but I will talk to you guys within a few days and I've got the points. Just, if you want to interject anything as far as what you've got into the notes here that I wanted to just point out particularly was please, everybody in Team Barrowman, just calm the hell down. It wasn't what you thought. Let it go. So I'll just leave it at that. I'll leave it to you two to discuss the finer points on that one. But thanks. I'm out.
All right.
Talk to you later, man.
All right, kids. I'll talk to you later.
Bye. All right. So, yeah, we have a couple things, not much. The big thing being that the new posters have come out for the next four episodes.
Yes.
And I mean, you know, just like they've been doing, and these actually look really cool. You know, we've got the Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, which is very, you know, M.C. Escher feel to it. You know, I think it looks awesome.
Yeah, it's very blue. They're doing like very color blocking. So this is a blue. The next one's the red. But I like the, you know, the TARDIS blue. Like you said, very M.C. Escher feel. Very fun kind of.
Yeah.
It looks like it'll be a fast paced episode based
on just
that
a mind bender kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then we get the Crimson Whore, and we've got the Doctor and Clara both in period outfits. You know, the Doctor in his bowler hat. You know, hopefully something will eventually replace the fez. I don't know. But
he looks all right in the bowler hat.
Yeah. But this is supposed to be our murder mystery kind of thing with Vastra and Jenny and Strax back for it. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the Nightmare in Silver. But the big one is actually the series finale. We do have a name for it. If you guys are sensitive about spoilers, you don't want to know, go ahead and stop listening now because this is about all we've got left. So just go ahead and stop and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Yes, we loved having you.
All right, now that all the pansies are gone. so the rumored title of the series finale was The Funeral of Riversong. Now, that has been proven that it's not the case, but the name that we have gotten is actually The Name of the Doctor.
Yeah, so I'm feeling like, thank God it wasn't The Funeral of Riversong, but also... the name of the doctor. Have you seen, there's a photo going around the internet of these people like rioting and they have a sign that says we don't want to know the doctor's name.
Yeah, it, even though it says the name of the doctor, I mean, it, you know, it's like the bells of St. John. It could just be a reference to something without ever going into it's, I don't know. I don't think that it's, I don't think it's going to be as big a deal as everybody's making it. It could be, but I don't know.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just very exciting. So,
do you think they're still going to have River Song in it?
Oh yeah. No, if you look at the poster, it actually has her name on there. It says Alex Kingston. So she is going to be in the episode, and the fact that that was the rumored title may mean something. You know, I don't know. We'll have to find out, but.
Okay. Yeah, I see it. Yes. Very exciting.
Yeah. So, but we've also got, what is it? It's titled as the most exciting 50th anniversary picture ever. And it's David Tennant and Matt Smith's feet up on a table or something. They're just their shoes. It's just a picture of their shoes. This is your bit of non-news for the week, apparently.
Yeah. I have jumped all over every picture and said that they're the greatest one ever. And even this, I'm like, huh.
It's awesome. Oh, my God. It's the feet of two doctors. Yeah. But no, so the big news actually this week, which is also a bit of non-news, is that John Barrowman, Team Barrowman has come out saying that one of the things going around was that that he wasn't going to be able to be in the 50th anniversary due to scheduling conflicts. And John Barrowman came out and said, no, that's not the case. You know, I went to the people, the runners of Arrow and told them, you know, if I get this part, I want to do it. And they cleared it and everything like that. So it's not a scheduling conflict. And, you know, you don't have any word from the BBC aside from, no, he's not in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, everyone's up in arms saying that they're just, you know, snubbing him or whatever. It's, you know, it's, I understand people wanting him to be in the show, but so what?
I'm pretty disappointed personally. So, I mean, some people are obviously reacting strongly to this. Personally, like, I think it's going to suck not having John Barrowman there. And I'm still kind of holding out hope that this is all just an elaborate troll and that he's still going to be in it.
I feel like if they're leaving him out, then there's a reason for it. It's, yeah, yes, it might be, but because he opened his mouth. I mean, it's looking more and more likely. The more information that we get, it looks more and more likely that they said, you know what? No, you opened your mouth when we told you not to, so you don't get to play with us. But yeah, it's, if they're cutting him out, then there's a reason for it. And it's just because they're trying to tell a story that Jack would not fit in. And if that's the case, I'm all for cutting him out. Yes, I'd love to see him back, but you know, I would much rather see a story without him and have it feel right than a story with him crammed in and have it feel like that's exactly what they did, was just cram him in.
I could see them maybe doing like an epilogue or something, like a 5-minute webisode where he shows up. I'd be okay with that, you know?
Possibly, yeah. Give us a little, a webisode or something where, you know, he shows up or something and the doctor tells him to run off and do this errand or something. You know, something like that, yeah, I'd be fine with that. But it looks like he's just not going to be involved at all from what this is saying. So, I don't
know.
Sad
news, yeah.
But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what kind of stuff they come up with next, because this is another one of those things that the internet has just blown up about, and it's like, I'm just more interested to see what the fandom comes up with than the actual story behind it. It's just interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty personal to everyone, it seems.
All right. Well, that's about all we've got this week. And kind of slow on the news front, but next week we do have The Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, and so I'm sure it's going to be, you know, an hour and a half of us just geeking out over what all we saw. You have any last words, Melissa?
No. I think we covered everything.
Yeah, until next week, this is Jay saying, I'm going to go take a trip to Metebolis 3.
And this is Melissa saying, you just took my thing that I was going to say about Metabolist 3.
We'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, on Stitcher Smart Radio, or on our homepage @GallifreyPublicRadio.com. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.
Stuck in a Pocket podcast, slightly to our left.
I was wondering where Bob got to.
Exactly. Hi, Bob. Bob has bitch tits. I guess we can't get away with saying that in the intro. But anyway, I'll let you pick that up and post it. It's stuck in my head now. I'm sorry.
His name is Robert Paulson.
His name is Robert Paulson. It's crossover night here at Gallifrey Public Radio.
All right. Well, until next week, this is Jay saying... I don't know. I can't come up with anything. Dang it.
You can do it.